and to me they are an integral part of my ancestral home. Of course you are quite right to keep them. Now please tell me about some of your pictures and furniture." The Marquis looked surprised. This was not the sort of conversation he would expect to hold with a lady. The majority of his female guests were always far more interested in him than in the provenance of his house. He was astonished that Nisa knew so much about architecture and the arts. They talked animatedly until Randolph, on the other side of Nisa, chirped up plaintively.
"I'm being neglected. I think it extremely unkind of my cousin, who has so much, to demand more of you than I am getting."
Nisa laughed. "It was I who was asking him a great number of questions."
"You can ask me any questions you like," Randolph persisted. "But it is easier for me to tell you how lovely you are, and how impossible it is to be so near to you without my heart beating tumultuously. I want, above anything else, to kiss you."
Nisa felt shocked at his familiarity, especially over the dinner table, and then she remembered that he believed he was speaking to Carol. She became convinced that he was only interested in Carol's money, and that he was merely working up to the moment when he would propose marriage to her. It made her feel uncomfortable, and, as soon as she could politely do so, she turned again to the Marquis. They talked about his fabulous horses. She longed to tell him of the Arab stallions she had ridden in Syria, and the small but very fast horses that had carried her and her father in India. But because this was impossible, she managed to make the Marquis tell her about the many places he had visited, and of the many horses he had ridden in other parts of the world. In fact, the time seemed to slip by very quickly in his company. Almost before Nisa realized it, Lady Sarah was rising from the far end of the table to take the ladies away.
"How are you enjoying yourself?" Carol whispered to Nisa.
"I'm having such a wonderful time, and thank you, dearest Carol, for bringing me here. It is all like a fairy story. I'm only scared it will all vanish like a dream, and I shall suddenly find myself back at the vicarage wondering what I should cook Papa for dinner."
Carol laughed. "I will not let you wake up too soon, Nisa, and I know tomorrow you'll be thrilled by the steeplechase."
"I only wish I could ride in it."
"I would not like you to do so," answered Carol. "I am told it is quite dangerous. Last year one of the riders broke his leg, and his horse fell so badly that it had to be put down."
Nisa drew in her breath.
"I hope that doesn't happen tomorrow. It would upset me too much."
"I think the Marquis will take every precaution to see that it does not." The gentleman appeared rather more quickly than was usual from the dining room. Carol moved across the room towards Sir Peter, and there was an expression of eagerness in her eyes as she did so. It made Nisha wonder again what would happen if Carol really did fall in love with Sir Peter, who had said quite categorically he would not marry a woman who was richer than he was. Then she heard the unpleasant voice of Randolph Holm behind her.
"Why are you looking worried, my beautiful one? There should not be anything troubling you at this moment when everyone wants you to be happy."
"I am happy. But unfortunately one cannot always be flying towards the stars. There must be moments when one is left behind on the ground without wings." She was talking to herself rather than to Randolph. However, the Marquis overheard, and he interrupted.
"Have I overlooked something in providing elegant entertainment for my guests, Miss Waverton? Is it possible that I should have given them all wings?"
Nisa giggled. "That is just what we all long for, but luckily we can fly in our dreams and in our imagination."
"That is just what I always attempt to do," mused the Marquis.